This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, April 12, 2023. I'm Caleb Brown. Politicians regularly involve law enforcement as an effective intermediary between patients and physicians. Cato's Jeff Singer says those kinds of policies were for many patients disastrous during the pandemic, and none of the rules that govern opioids in particular are based on evidence or respect for individuals. To put it mildly, he says it's cops practicing medicine.
As you recall, in November 2022, I co-authored a white paper called Cops Practicing Medicine, which traces the involvement of law enforcement in not only in intruding into the patient-doctor relationship, but in trying to influence and direct how doctors practice medicine, all as an outgrowth of drug prohibition and the war on drugs. And the latest example of that is with the Drug Enforcement Administration's new proposed rules regarding telemedicine and prescribing of controlled substances. So during the pandemic, as an emergency measure, there are obviously many people couldn't get into doctors. Doctors' offices were closed. So they relaxed the requirement that a person has to see a healthcare practitioner in person in order to receive a prescription for a controlled substance. And when it comes to people who were getting referred for addiction treatment, for substance use disorder, to be started on buprenorphine, which is one of the two most commonly used medications to treat opioid use disorder, the same relaxation occurred where since many offices were closed, you didn't have to get into the addiction specialist's office to get the prescription. You could be given that through a telemedicine visit. Well, now that the emergency is coming to a close, the DEA is offering new rules. And this is at a time when, of course, many of us have realized the had previously untapped potential of telemedicine and telehealth. So these new rules that are about to go into effect, first of all, are going to say that anyone who's receiving any controlled substances must have at least one in-person visit with the prescriber. So, and this isn't necessarily, this is separate from people who are receiving, let's say, buprenorphine for opioid use disorder, which I'll get to in a minute. But basically, let's say you're a psychiatrist, for example, and you're treating somebody for ADHD. So you're prescribing Adderall for them or Ritalin or one of those drugs. And now you can no longer do that unless at least one time, it doesn't have to be afterwards, but you need to see them one time in person. Now, I could tell you that this could create a lot of inconveniences and expense. Supposing, for example, you live in a rural area or remote from the doctor, and now you have to go see the doctor in person, as if that's going to change anything, especially when you're dealing, for example, with mental health disorders or cognitive disorders. There's not a lot of physical examination that's really required. The interview and conversation, especially if it is both audio and video on telehealth, provides the practitioner with basically all the information needed to decide what the problem is and prescribe. So, for example, if you're getting Adderall prescribed by a psychiatrist for ADHD, it's not like that psychiatrist is going to want to listen to your heart and lungs, and maybe palpate your abdomen and look in your ears and eyes. No, the psychiatrist is going to have a lengthy, complicated interview with you to figure out whether you need to be on Adderall. But now you're going to have to see the doctor. Now, you don't necessarily, if you can't get to see the doctor, for example, let's say it doesn't have to be, by the way, psychiatrists. There are other doctors who obviously prescribe controlled substances for certain disorders, including ADHD or anxiety or depression. But that doctor may be far away. As an alternative, the DEA will allow you to go see another doctor who also happens to have a narcotics prescribing license. And that doctor can sign a letter saying, yes, I agree with this doctor that you're seeing remotely. And I don't object to that doctor prescribing you this medication. Now, that's another inconvenience and problem. And there's also the issue of how many other doctors are going to want to get involved in that and maybe even risk liability. So you're just creating a problem. The other problem they're creating has to do with treatment of opioid use disorder. So during the emergency, if you wanted to get treatment for opioid use disorder with buprenorphine, which is one of that and methadone are the two most effective ways of treating it, you could do a telehealth consult with a physician or healthcare practitioner that treats opioid use disorder. And after the appropriate interview, they'll prescribe buprenorphine for you. Well, now that the emergency is over, if you do that, you're only allowed, they'll let you do that because, they want to expedite getting you on treatment for addiction. That's the good part. But on the other hand, they say you cannot be prescribed more than a 30-day supply by that prescriber, and you have to get in to see that prescriber within 30 days in order to continue. Well, just the average wait time now to see just a primary care doctor in the United States is 26 days. And there are fewer healthcare practitioners who engage in treating substance use disorder. So you're creating a situation where a significant number of people who might have been started on a 30-day supply of buprenorphine can't get into the doctor for the visit to make that official. And so they run out and they either turn to the street for it or they just they go back to using whatever drugs they were using before. And there's a lot of research showing that if you abruptly stop either buprenorphine or methadone, the likelihood is people are going to return to the street source of their drugs and resume the problem they had. A lot of this, of course, is not scientific. It's not evidence-based. And it's also based by moralizing and stigmatizing people who have who use controlled substances in general, not just people with opioid use disorder. The opioid use disorder part is because obviously underlying this is, I guess, the notion that you can't be trusted. Somebody has to look at you and see if you are for real. From a scientific standpoint, many of these conditions that are getting treated with controlled substances don't really require a physical examination. If they did, then the practitioner would insist on it because, the practitioner obviously, not only is there the professional considerations, but there's also the liability considerations. So with certain kind of drugs that might have serious physical side effects, and you may need to know whether the person's got high blood pressure or something of that sort before you start them on it, because it could make it worse. Well, those are the situations where you're going to want to say to the patient, you don't have to have a policeman tell you this. As a practitioner, you'll say, before I put you on this, I need to check some things on you physically, so we better have an appointment. And then finally, if the idea behind this is that this is going to somehow stop dishonest healthcare practitioners who are trying to operate pill mills or any other fly-by-night organizations that are basically trying to deal drugs and using telehealth for that purpose, that's not going to stop them. First of all, if you're doing it for that reason, then obviously you're motivated by money, and it's worth it to you to come up with some way to say, look, I'll be happy to prescribe all the Adderall or meth or whatever it is that you want, but you have to come and see me for this one, make this one appointment to see me, because that's how that's how we'll be able to get away with it. So and of course it'd be worth your while to do that, to invest in that, and you could even charge for that.
Is there any evidence that lawmakers, when crafting these laws, and police in advocating for these laws, is there any evidence that they just want to put up hurdles, or is there a good faith belief that these things actually will have the impacts that you say that they won't?
I think for the most part, maybe I'm just too kind. I think for the most part, they just don't understand the medicine or the science. And so they think they really think they're doing the right thing. And this is the problem when you have, like I said, cops practicing medicine. They just don't understand it. And so to them, they're thinking this is going to make it safer or prevent abuse. But they just don't understand the nature of the drugs, the nature of practice. they probably think that, you know, a doctor seeing somebody in person is going to, for these kind of things, is better medicine. I have to assume that. But then even then, there's a lot of, you know, logical inconsistency in their program. So, for example, the new rule says that you'll have to see the patient in person once. So, in other words, I could see you once, and then as far as the DEA is concerned, thereafter, I never have to see you in person again. I could just keep prescribing this medication for you. Well, maybe I ought to ask my local cop on the beat when he thinks how frequently he thinks I should see my patient in person when I have them on a long-term drug like Adderall, because obviously they know better than I do how important it is to examine people. And so I should ask them. But apparently, according to the latest opinions of law enforcement, is that as a physician, I only need to see that person once, and then I could probably just keep prescribing via telehealth indefinitely.
On a related matter, states are moving ahead with legalizing testing supplies for people who might be using heroin or other like powerful opioids to detect fentanyl in opioids. Have police been generally negative on that, or have they been supportive?
It seems like the police are generally supportive of that. The problem is, you know, different police are individuals, and some are more accepting of the idea of harm reduction. Others, and it's not just police, it's even pharmacists. So, for example, there's still reports of pharmacists who don't want to hand out naloxone to people showing up with a prescription for it or using the standing order because they feel that they're enabling what they consider to be a bad decision, on a bad lifestyle decision. So there are going to be cops like that who are going to enforce the currently existing drug paraphernalia laws in many of the states that make it illegal to distribute any device or equipment that could be used to test illegal drugs. But then there are others who, you know, they, even if it's illegal and they could, if they want to arrest you for when they see you doing it, they look the other way. And many people who operate harm reduction organizations in states where the paraphernalia laws are kind of make it where it's a gray zone. It's not black and white. They don't know can I be arrested for doing this or not? Because you could have different interpretations of law. They're very dependent on the police, hoping that they kind of look the other way because they know they're involved in saving lives and stopping the spread of disease. And a lot of police do look the other way, but again, it depends on the policeman.
What's the interplay between states and feds when it comes to cops practicing medicine broadly? I can imagine that there are a lot of states that would like to be considerably more liberal with their approach, but there is sort of a federal backstop when it comes to prescribing medicine at all.
Well, of course, you have this now when it comes to psychedelics or marijuana, where increasingly we're seeing states say we're making it legal in our state, and our law enforcement will not do anything to help enforce federal law because, as far as our state is concerned, this is legal. So then it's up to the feds if they want to devote resources to coming into these states and arresting people. And again, they have limited resources, so it's up to the prosecutorial discretion regarding where they want to apply those resources. But that's another reason behind the movement for states to legalize a lot of these presently illegal drugs like cannabis, like psychedelics, because the hope is that it's going to eventually press Congress in Washington to want to look at these federal laws, because otherwise they're caught in this contradiction where basically the federal laws are being ignored by the states. The states are telling the federal government, well, if you want to enforce your law, you enforce your law. This is not illegal in our state. And so the idea is to press them to finally get off the stick and do something about it.
Jeff Singer is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.